And we are holding on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, the ninth line. The line begins Kori. We left off that we quoted a Braisa. We quoted a Braisa that mentioned, among other things, what the dinim are about whether you're allowed to use a dry, whether you're allowed to use Dalavinim that are dry. The Tanakhama had said no, Rabbi Yehuda had said yes. Rabbi Yehuda bore proof for that, in fact, from a case, but the Chacham told him that was a Shasal Chak, so it's no proof. We assumed that Rabbi Yehuda is talking about all Dalad Minim, and in that case it would show that even by the Esrog he doesn't care if it's harder or not. But we said that no, not necessarily. He may be referring to the other Minim, he may be referring to the Lulav, and the other Minim, whereas the Esrog he agrees has to be harder. So we discussed the question, would he hold that a harder may be applied only to the Esrog, since it only said harder by it, creates harder, and not the others, or maybe once it says by the Esrog, do we apply it to all the others, which is what the Chacham is saying. Okay, so now getting back to other points that we said in the Braisa, Omar, we said Kashem Shein Kosh in Mehen, just like you're not allowed to have any less than the Dalad Minim, you can't have only three of them. Kachen Mesifin Aleihem, the same way you can't add anything to them. Of course you're not allowed to add anything to them. You'd have an Isser of Baal Tosif. The Torah tells you don't add anything to the mitzvahs. This past week's Parsha. The answer is Maud Tema. The answer is that the Chiddush is more according to Rabbi Yehuda. Hoyov Amr Rabbi Yehuda Lulav Tzarech Eged. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, we've said before, and we're going to continue, we're going to explain it more times in the Stedek, Rabbi Yehuda holds the minim must be bound together, and if they're not, then you're not Yoytze. We discussed in the first paragraph why he holds, briefly, why he holds that. We're going to talk about it more in as we go through the paragraph. Anyway, he holds that if the minim are not bound together, then you don't have valid Dalad minim. So the imaisi minachrina. So therefore, according to the Yehuda, if you were to bring another min, and you don't bind it together with them, fine. Hai lechodekari, v'hai lechodekari. Each one stands by itself. The lulav and the other minim with it stand by themselves. The other thing stands by itself because it's not part of the bundle. So therefore, it wouldn't be considered bal tosif kamash malon. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda wants us to know that nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda would hold that it is an isur of bal tosif. Provided, actually, now that we're going to learn later in the parak that all the Dalad Minim have to be picked up, Kederach Gedulosa may also be picked up in the direction in which they grow when they're actually on the tree or when they're actually on the plant. So therefore, over here, if you took a fifth min and held it together with them also right side up, then Rabbi Yehuda would say that you're Oivron Baltosa. Which in fact, Tosfos discusses the point that really according to the Chachamim as well, if Ein Tzarech Eged, you could also say that the thing stands by itself. The point is more according to Rabbi Yehuda, given that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they have to be bound together, so now when you put another one not in the bundle, then that demonstrates that you're not considering it part of the bundle, so you would think maybe there's no problem with it. But yeah, it does have to be dead if you do lost them. So if you took something else and then bound it around it in a different direction, for example, let's say we talked about the other day binding the lulav leaves versus other things, then you could be, then there might not be a problem of altosif in it, because in any case it's not dead if you do lost it. Next, we said in the Braisa, Omar, Loi Motza Esrig, we said that if you don't find an Esrig, Loi Yobi Loi Rimoin Vele Parish Vele Davacher, you're not allowed to instead take a pomegranate or a quince or any other kind of fruit. Interesting, when we quoted the Braisa on Amar Aleph, we had it the other way around, first Parish, then Rimoin. Here the Gemara is quoting first Rimoin, then Parish. Anyway, so the question is, Pshita, obviously, why would you think you're allowed to? The Torah tells you, The Torah tells you creates chodur, and we're going to learn later on Daf Lamed Hey how we know that it is an esrog, but in any case it is a clear halacha that Amram gives us as an example of a clear halacha that Moshe taught it Baal Peh to the Jewish people that it has to be an esrog, and nobody ever had any thought that it should be, and nobody among the Chachamim at least ever had any thought that should be anything else. So what would make us think that you could use a pomegranate or what have you? The answer is Maud Tema. Without the Braisa telling us, you would have thought, Lysi, maybe you should take some of the min if you don't have the Esrog. Ki heichid lo chalot yishtakach, Torah's Esrog, so you don't forget completely about the whole concept of taking an Esrog. So maybe, as like a Zecher, for it, the Chacham would tell you to take something else instead. Kamashmalan, therefore the Braisa tells us no, and there's a reason why not to. Zinid not chorva minay, because there could, right, fine, right now you have a zecher for the mitzvah, but on the other hand, there could come out a very bad thing from it. You're going to get used to it. You're going to get used to the idea that you take a pomegranate or what have you, and then even when there is an esrog available, you're going to take that, and you're going to forget completely what the proper min is. So therefore, nothing doing in the first place. Don't take anything else as a substitute. The Rosh does bring in a point that what happens if you only have some of the minim and you're completely missing others, so then maybe you should just, let's say you only have a lulav and not the other one, then maybe you should take a lulav, without a bracha, fine, but because then at least you're not adding anything else, and since it says in the Torah that you have to take the four minim, then we don't have to be so concerned maybe that he's going to forget in the future and think, you know what, it was good enough 1 year, I took just a lulav, therefore obviously that's good enough, because the fact is it does say explicitly in the Torah, whereas the identity of the esrog doesn't explicitly say in the Torah, we're going to say later on that we see various hints in the pasuk for it.
So then if that's the case, that it's such a certainty that it's an esrog, why the Torah doesn't state it clearly and straightforwardly? What's the point of saying Priyei Tzadar?
I think there are some of the Mefarshim actually who explain that Priyei Tzadar is the Torah's name for an esrog. In other words, it has different names, just like there you have certain words that changed in the Hebrew of Tanakh versus the Hebrew of the Chachamim. So the same way over here, this could be that in the times of the Torah, this actual fruit was called Priyei Tzadar. I think there are a couple of Mefarshim on the Pasuk that explain it that way. But other than that, it's an example where we see that you can't use exclusively Torah Shabbat Sav. You need Torah Shabbat Peh in order to clarify Torah Shabbat Sav. The same way as a lot of other things. The same way as this past week's parasha, we had the Zavachta Kasha Tzvisicha. Why doesn't it say the rules of Shchita in Torah Shabbat Sav? Because those are left. Torah Shabbat Peh. You gotta learn Torah Shabbat Peh to understand. Okay. Anyway. Going on. Okay, so that was a side thing. That was a side thing just to explain parts of the Braisa. Now, let's get back to Rabbi Yehuda. What we were saying so far is that Rabbi Yehuda does not require the other minim to be hodder. He requires the esrog to be hodder, we said, but not necessarily the other minim, because even though the chachamim hold is a hekesh between them, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He doesn't learn that hekesh. So therefore, so that gets back to the question, therefore, whether a dry lulav or hadassim or aravis is possible or not, Rabbi Yehuda will say that they're kosher because he doesn't care about a hodder for the other minim, and the chachamim will say it's possible. So now, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof from a Braisa. A Braisa says, Esrog ha-yoshan posel, an old Esrog is posel, and if it's old, then it's dry. In fact, Rabbi Hanano has a girsa that's dry. So it's posel for Rabbi Yehuda Mashi. Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. So the Gemara says, Tiyuk to the Rava. So there you have a clear contradiction to Rava. Rava said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Esrog has to be hodder, but the other minim do not. Now we see from this Braisa, that even the esrog, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't care if it's hot or he doesn't care if it's dry. Well, says, you're right, that's it. So there is a stira to him. So that's it. Rabbi Yehuda does not hold that you need a hodder even, that you need a hodder even by the esrog. He will say that when it says creates hodder, then it means one of the other things the Gemara is going to bring on Nam Lamed Hey Amr Aleph, a half dozen limudim from different tanoim about what the word hodder means, where it can mean other things other than beautiful. So if you hold it, we'll hold like one of those, therefore he doesn't necessarily hold the esrog, and the other minim have to be beautiful. Okay, so the question is, for like boy hodder, so you're telling me when it comes to the esrog, Rabbi Yehuda does not require it to be hodder. We learn later on in our perek, when we get to the Mishnah, we have a Mishnah now about the Mullah, the next one's going to be about the Hadas, the next one about the Arava, then some general dinim about the Dalad Minim, and then about the Esrog. And in the Mishnah about the Esrog, it says, Et hayorek kauti, an Esrog that is green like a kauti, and the word kauti itself means a leek. So it means, so a leek is a deep green color, so therefore we mean an esrog that is green like that. Tosfos, let's finish the Gemara over here, and then we'll say, so Ayodah Katauti, an esrog that's green like a leek, Rameir Machshir, Rabbi Yehuda Poisel. Rameir says it's kosher, Rabbi Yehuda says it's possible. Lav Mishim Deboi Hoder. Now why would Rabbi Yehuda hold that it's possible? Presumably it's because he requires the esrog to be hoder. And the answer is like, not necessarily. Mishim Deboi Gomer Peira. The reason is because the fruit is not yet ripe. You don't have the taste of it. You don't have the you don't have the quality of the fruit yet. So therefore, like in that sense, it's not an esrog yet. Now, first of all, Tosfos talks about a couple of things. First of all, Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about what exactly does the color yorek by itself mean. Here we're saying yorek kakauti, so clearly it means the color of a leaf, which is green. But what about in other places in Shas, when it says that when it says the word yorek, what does that mean? Tosfos talks about three possibilities. It might be that yorek usually is green. And then in that case, why are we comparing it specifically over here to kauti? Or it might mean that yorek actually means blue. And you find, for example, that tchelas is similar in color to kauti, which implies therefore that the kauti therefore is bluish, and therefore that yorek would also mean blue. And there's certain other gemaras that also seem to imply that. On the other hand, yorek might mean yellow. So the fact is, they had, it seems, from different Gemaras, that there's a Tosfos goes and then discusses the pros and cons of it, but the fact is, it seems that the word yorek in Lashon Kodesh meant a number of different shades of colors that nowadays we would call them different colors, and in modern Hebrew also they have different colors for them. Within yellow itself, Tosfos talks about it. It could be yellow like gold, it could be yellow like beeswax. Lamaisa, of course, an esrog is supposed to be the color of gold or the color of beeswax. So therefore, yorek itself, so yorek by itself can't mean yellow over here. It has to mean green, or like Tosfos says, maybe even possibly blue. But in other places in Shas, sometimes the word yorek may indeed mean yellow. Okay. Anyway, Tosfos also adds that we're not really talking about the when we say over here loy gomar pera. Now we do have later on in the perek, we're going to have an argument if the esrog is unripe. So Tosfos says that's actually not really the same machlokas as here. Here we're talking about where the esrog is, here as far as the green esrog, we're talking about it's unripe. Sorry, Tosfos is referring to the next case over here. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring, so okay, so we don't have a proof that Rabbi Yehuda says that the esrog has to be hodder. What we see is that he does hold it has to be an esrog, of course, and if the fruit is so unripe that it's still green, Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold it's not really an esrog at all. Next, Toshma, the same Mishnah continues, sheer esrog are cotton, the minimum size of a small esrog, what the smallest esrog you're allowed to use, Rameo and Ke'egas, Rabbi Yehuda and Kebeza. Rabbi Meir says the size of a walnut, and Rabbi Yehuda says the size of an egg. So, now why would Rabbi Yehuda require it to be the size of an egg? Lav mishum debori hoder. Wouldn't it be again because of Pashas he required the esrog to be hoder, and if it's too small then it's not hoder? And the answer is like, not necessarily. Again, the reason is, mishum de gomer peira, because the fruit hasn't completely finished growing yet, otherwise it would be a normal size. In the previous one, we're saying it's not grown yet because it's still green. Here we're talking about as far as the size, which brings Tosfos to say. Here we're not talking about whether the esrog is ripe or not. There is a machlokas later on in the perek about a very unripe esrog, whether it's kosher or not. Here we're saying, and just now we had Rabbi Yehuda saying that the esrog is green. But here we're talking about where the esrog is physically small. Sometimes you have an esrog that physically never grows to be larger than a certain size. But Rabbi Yehuda is still going to say. So Rabbi Yehuda is still going to say that it's still no good. And the same way, Tosfos said that you have some fruits that never ripen on the tree. So the same way, you can have this esrog that's never going to grow larger on the tree. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like it. He holds that's not considered gemar peira. Now, what happens is, mice and b'chol yom that we go and buy green esrogim and then we ripen them at home, that's fine. Once they start ripening, once they start having some yellow on them, then you know that they're ripe. The fact that they're able to, you put them together with an apple, as people often do, and they start, and then that apple gives off gases and that causes it to turn yellow. Fine. That shows that there was gemar peira, that shows that it was ripe. It just hadn't been on the tree long enough. Therefore, it is kosher. Officially, minhag Chabad is to take an esrog that's completely yellow, that doesn't have any green on it, but lamaisa, not always are you able to find one. Okay. Next, Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof about what Rabbi Yehuda holds. The same Mishnah continues, over Godel, what's the largest size esrog you're allowed to use? Kadesh Yechas Shnayim B'yodei Achas Divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the largest that you can use is where you can still fit two of them, two of that size in one hand. Rav Yossi, Rav Yossi said no, even if the esrog is so big that you have to hold it with both hands together, it's still kosher. So now, my time, why would Rav Yehuda say that an esrog is possible why would Rav Yehuda say that an esrog is only kosher if it's smaller than the size that you can put two in one hand? Wouldn't it be because he requires the esrog to be harder and the pashka said a too big esrog is not harder? And the answer is no, that's not necessarily Rabbi Yehuda's reason. The reason is kibin to Amar Rava, because Rava tells us later in the parak, lulav yamin the esrog the smol, the lulav you're supposed to hold in your right hand, the esrog you're supposed to hold in your left hand. And the reason is, we're going to say later, because the lulav has more minim in it, and it's three, as opposed to the esrog is only one, so therefore you show the lulav and the hadassim and Rava's more chashivos by putting them in the right hand. What might happen is, zimin in the michlifile, it might happen that you get mixed up. You accidentally pick up the esrog in your right hand, and lulav in your left, but also lachakidu. Now you're going to try to flip them around. But also, it's silly. What happens if you're not necessarily going to put them down? You may not have a table there or anything to put them down. So you might, if the esrog is too large, you're not going to be able to juggle them from one hand to the other. You're going to wind up dropping the esrog, and then it'll get absorbed. So therefore, if Yehuda doesn't want you using an esrog larger than a certain size, this way, even if you mix them up, you'll be able to flip them around. But not that he actually holds that it would be possible with larger than that. Basically, he would say it's exaver because of that. Okay, so the question is, the Ella, but of Yehuda, Hapsib, Adar, new, according to Yehuda, the fact is it does say Adar. So if we're saying now, the Maskana, that Yehuda does not hold that the esrog has to be Adar, then what is he doing with that Hapsib? And the answer is, Ahu, Hadar Be'elon, Mishana Lashana. He says that word hoder, we read it as if it said hadur, the one that dwells, and therefore it teaches us that the esrog, again, we're going to have various limudim, and that's lemon hay, where we see that the word hoder refers specifically to the esrog, and one of them is hadur v'ilonim, shana l'shana, it's a fruit that remains on the tree from one year to the next, meaning most fruits, if you don't pick them while they're ripe, then eventually they ripen and they fall off the tree. The esrog is unique in that the fruit stays on the tree and continues growing until you pick it. So hadur, that it dwells on the tree from year to year, Rabbi Yehuda will hold one of the drashas that we say over there. Tosfos says over here it's Ben Azai. The Rashash says actually the Gusa is supposed to be the Marshal says the Gusa is supposed to be Rabbi Bahu. Anyway, the point is he holds that's what hadur means. So Rabbi Yehuda can hold that way. Also, he doesn't hold that it means that the thing has to be hadur. Okay. Next. The Mishnah had said, Shal Asherim Shal Irani Dachas. The Mishnah had said that Lulavim, that apostle, include ones from an Asherah tree or from an Irani Dachas. So the question is, Shal Asherah apostle? You're telling me a Lulav from an Asherah is apostle? Well, I'm a Rabba, Lulav Shal Avedizor Allah Yitobim, not our kosher. Didn't Rabba say you shouldn't take a Lulav that was used for Avodah Zarah, which can mean a couple of possibilities. It can mean, Rashi says, that, for example, they used it as a broom to sweep the ground in front of the Avodah Zarah. It can also mean, for example, that the Avodah Zarah was worshipped using this lulav. Let's say, for example, you have some type of Avodah Zarah that the way of worshipping it is to throw a lulav at it, or pass a lulav in front of it. So such a thing, lo yito, you shouldn't use it l'chatzchila for the mitzvah, v'im not al kosher. But if you did take such a lulav, then b'di'evit is kosher, because of the even though it's also b'hanah, fine, mitzvahs lav l'honis nitnu, the mitzvahs are not a matter of hanah, the mitzvahs are Hashem told us to do them, and we have to do them. Like a slave serves his master, Rashi says. So therefore, you're not really having hanah from it, therefore it's kosher, b'di'evit. So why over here are we saying that a lulav from an asheder would be possible? The answer is, the Gemara says, what we're talking about over here in our Mishnah is the Asherah of Moshe. So what does that mean? Rashi explains the Asherahs that existed in Eretz Yisrael in Moshe's times when he's warning the Jewish people in this past week's parashah, in Parashas Re'eh, Abed to Abdul Eskol Makomis, and then get rid of their Asherahs, and that means you have to burn the Asherahs, so Asherah and Tisrof would rage. So therefore, anything that has to be burnt, to katuti michtas shiurin, we consider as if it's already burnt, as if the shear of it has already been cut down, as though it's already been burnt to ashes, and therefore you don't have a shear, as we're going to say, let's soon, on Lamed Beis, a lulav and the other minim have a minimum shear, they have a minimum length, so therefore here you don't have that. So the Gemara says Dekanami. In fact, you can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Dekatani, Dumya de'irani dachas, because the Mishnah mentions together in the same breath, Shalashera, Vishal irani dachas. Now, an irani dachas we know needs to be burnt. Therefore, obviously, we must be talking about the kind of Asherah that has to be burnt. Meaning, in other words, as opposed to, if let's say, for example, they use the lulav to sweep the floor in front of the Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't even necessarily be, I mean, it would be also Ba'anah, so it would be also Ba'anah as something that was used to serve Avodah Zarah, but they could be Mevatel afterwards. The Goy could decide that he doesn't want to worship this Avodah Zarah, or he doesn't want to use this lulav for worshiping Avodah Zarah anymore, and he's Mevatel it, and then it becomes Mutar Ba'anah. The same way if, let's say, they threw the lulav in front of the Avodah Zarah, same idea. Tosfos actually discusses at some length over here that a couple of different other possibilities of what Asheira de Moshe is. One is, besides Rashi had said, it means the ones that existed in Eretz Yisrael when they come in, and the Torah is telling us, even though usually you're able to be mevatel Avodah Zarah, here you don't, you have to destroy them, but Tosfos brings up a few other possibilities. We could be talking about an Avodah Zarah that belonged to a Jew, and the halacha is that of a disorder of a Jew, you can never be mevatel, as opposed to the braisa that's saying that b'dieved you could, would be talking about an avodah of a goy. That's one who was mevatel. That's one possibility. A second possibility Tosfos says is that there's a difference between before or after you mevatel it. So if you mevatel it, then b'dieved you're good. So cutting off the lulav from the tree amounts to bittul. So therefore, but you wouldn't be Yotze before you were Mavatala. So you could have a case where the lulav was cut off the tree and then somebody used it for Avodah Zarah, then it would be possible, as opposed to if the tree itself was being worshipped and then they went and cut the lulav off the tree, then that would constitute bittul, therefore be kosher. And a third possibility, Tosfos says, you could even distinguish whether the tree was planted to begin with for Avodah Zarah, or whether it was planted for some other purpose and then he worshipped Avodah Zarah for it, then the tree doesn't necessarily become also Ba'anah. Okay. Next. The Mishnah had said, Niktam Roshay. Another case where the lulav is possible is if the top of it is cut off. So, Omer Rabbuna, Loishonu Elam Niktam. That only applies that it's possible if it was actually cut off on top. Avol Nisdak. But if the top of it was cracked, kosher, then it's kosher. Now, with these two things, Niktam and Nistak, there are a number of different opinions among the Rishonim what exactly these terms mean. In the case of Niktam, among others, does it mean the top leaf was cut off, and the top middle leaf over there, yeah, the top of the little of the one double leaf that you have on the top over there. So are we talking about that was cut off? And if so, do we mean the whole thing or maybe only part of it? Or do we mean that part of the shedra itself was actually cut off? Or do we mean that Niktam Roshay might mean that the tops of most of the leaves along the length of the lulav were cut off? There's those and a bunch of other opinions among them showing him as well. Anyway, the Hunna is telling us that if Nistak, if it was cracked, then it's kosher. So again, cracked could mean, again, Rashi explained that it means we're talking about the tips of the leaves. So we're not talking about necessarily the middle double leaf. We're talking about all the other leaves on the lulav. If they were cracked part way, then they would still be kosher. There's also, again, you have other Rishonim that explain that cracked means that the shedra itself is cracked. So then it would be kosher. So the Gemara says, you need that kosher. You're telling me it's kosher if it's cracked. Well, Tanya, we're learning a bright. So a bunch of things that make a lulav possible that we're not mentioned in our Mishnah. Lulav kofuf, a lulav that's bent, and we'll discuss soon in the Gemara what kind of bending we're talking about. Or kavuts, or a lulav that is kavuts. Now we have, the gears that we have in front of us is kavuts with a kof. Therefore, it's related to the word kotz, which means a thorn. So it means a lulav that thorns are sticking out of it. On the other hand, Tosfos brings from the Oruch that the Gusa would be with a chaf, with a cuff, and therefore kavuts with a cuff would mean shriveled, that the lulav is shriveled up. In fact, both of those are accepted by halacha, and both those possible lulav. Soduk, or if the lulav is cracked, like we just said, okum, or if bent, doma lamagol, those are actually one thing, and actually says okum doma lamagol, if it's bent resembling a sickle, someone with very, very bent over, so it's very, very curved. Possel, all of those are possel. Chorus possel, also if the lulav is chorus, which means that it's hard, that if it's hardened, then it's possel. What happens is, as we talked about in the Mishnah, the way it works is the branch that's the lulav starts by growing in the middle of the tree with its leaves tightly bound together to the shedra, like we buy them. Then eventually, as the branch starts maturing, then the bases of the leaves and the shedra start hardening, and eventually the leaves start pointing away from the shedra. Eventually it reaches the point where they're bending away and they can't even, the bases of them are so hard that you can't even physically bend them back towards the shedra. At that point, that lulav is called chorus, and therefore it's possible. On the other hand, doimel chorus kosher. On the other hand, if it only resembles that, meaning they're not quite there yet. The leaves are starting to get hard, but they haven't gotten so hard. You could still bend them and have them go along the length of the shedra. Then kosher. Then it's kosher. Anyway, we see from the braisa that sodruk is possible. How is Rahuna telling us that sodruk is kosher? The answer is amar apapa to avid kehemik. The answer is the braisa when it says it's possible, if it's sodruk, if it's cracked, means that it resembles a fork. You have in Rabbeinu Hanano, you have a diagram over there showing, illustrating a fork. In other words, when the two sides of the crack are really far apart, and it looks like, so actually, Rashi explains it's not even cracked. Rashi explains like this. You could have that the lulav itself may grow with a deformity where it has two shedras, where instead of having one shedra running the length of it, like normal, it has two shedras, each one with leaves sticking out of it. So therefore, it actually resembles a fork. But it naturally grows that way. Then that's when we'd be saying it's possible, whereas Ravuna would be telling us that if it didn't, it grew naturally with one shedra, and then the top of it was split, then it would be kosher. Different Rishonim talk about different possibilities. What's going on over here? We could be talking about where the leaves themselves are split, and we're saying it is kosher if it's only split a little bit, but if you could have where it's split, even though it's only split a little bit, the two sides of the split are very far apart, and therefore it looks like, as we're saying, it looks like a fork. So then we'd be saying, even though physically the split is not very large, but because the two sides of it are in different directions, then therefore it'd be possible, as opposed to what we're going to talk about soon, where you have a split and it's not like that, where they're still basically together. Okay. Next. We said that if the lulav is curved resembling a sickle, so Amar Rava, why Amar and Ella Lafana? So Rava says that's only talking about if it's curved forward. Meaning forward would be the direction opposite the shedra. So you hold the lulav when you take the galav minim, you hold the lulav with the shedra facing you. The other side, the back side of the lulav, is the side that looks like it has a groove running down the middle of it. That's the shedra. If you ever take all the leaves off the lulav, you'll notice that the shedra is kind of triangular in cross section. You have the front of it is wider. That's the part we think of when we think of the shedra, and then it narrows toward the back. And in the back, you have, and in the back, it comes to a point. So that side is called, we think of it at the back. The Gemara is thinking of it at the front of the lulav. So if the lulav is bent in that direction, it's bent downward in that direction, that's when we say it's possible. Avol akra, but if it's bent backwards, meaning in the direction of the shedra, so that when the person is holding the lulav, the lulav curves forward towards him, then kosher, then it would be fine. Because then biryosehu, then that's the normal way of a lulav to grow. Lulav often are shaped like that, where they're bent a little bit towards the front. Although it does say in Shulchan Aruch, that's only if it's bent a little bit. We're not talking about it's bent a huge amount, then yet. Rav Nachman, Sdodin Kilafon of Dami. Rav Nachman says if it's bent to one side, then that's considered like toward the front. Therefore, that would be possible. But Amr Kilafon of Dami, a different version is that he said it's like toward the back. Therefore, it would be kosher. Since we're not sure, then we don't take such a lulav. Lamaisa, it says that the best thing is that the lulav shouldn't be bent at all, and the lulav that we buy typically are not bent at all, they're only bent a tiny bit. But if they are bent, then you have the dinim that you say over here. This that we're talking about, by the way, is when it comes to the shedra of the lulav being bent. Sometimes you go to the Dalad Minim store, and they have the lulav that have knetlach, that have where the upper leaves, the top part of the upper leaves on the top of the lulav is bent over. those are actually kosher, and in fact, some people prefer them because then they're less likely to split apart. On the other hand, minhag Chabad is that we don't take them. Even that, from Shulchan Aruch, it says, if they're bent a little bit at the top, then that's fine, but if like most of the leaf is bent in half, then it would be possible, but our minhag is not to take such a beloved anyway. We take ones that have the top leaves straight. Okay. But Amar Rava, and Rava says, here's another din about the kashrus of a lulav. Hai lulav of the solik b'chad chutzah, a lulav that has one chutzah. And what does that mean? You have, again, a few different explanations. Rashi says it means that it has leaves on only one side of the shedra, meaning on the other side is completely bare. Another explanation is that we're talking about that the leaves of the lulav are supposed to be double, or usually double leaves. So here we're talking about where all the leaves grow singly. They don't grow as double leaves that are attached together along one side as they normally are. That's how the Rambam explains it, for example. And then you have an explanation from the Goyim that we're talking about a lulav where instead of having like this, you have leaves going. You have leaves coming from the bottom, and then shortly after that, another pair of leaves and another pair of leaves and so forth going all the way up to the top. Suppose you have a lulav where you only have one leaf running all the way from the bottom to the top on each side. That would be another meaning of the solik b'chadutza. Anyway, any of those bal mum who will possible. All those lulavim are that such a lulav is considered a bal mum. Therefore, it's possible for the mitzvah. And the halacha is like all of those explanations. So any of those would possible lulav if it has leaves only on one side, if the leaves are single instead of double, or most of the leaves, that is, or if they have only one leaf on each side going to the bottom to the top. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, nifritzu olav chula, we said if the leaves are nifrats, which means broken or severed or cut off, but we said in the Mishnah, on the other hand, nifridu olav, if the leaves are separated, then it would be kosher. So what does that mean? Amar Papa, nifritzu ka'ovet da'ovet kichofya. The word nifritzu means that they resemble a glue. So Rashi says what you do, you tear the lulav leaves off the shedra. You bind a bunch of them together. And then you have a groom. So the Mishnah is telling us that kind is fossil. Nifridu be ifrudi. On the other hand, the word nifridu would mean where they're only separated, where, like we said, the bottoms of the leaves are beginning to harden and they're starting to point away from the shedra, but they're not completely away yet. You still have that they're still basically growing in the same direction as the shedra, and you could, in principle, bind them back together with it. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos discusses at the beginning of the Perek that in both cases we're talking about where the leaves are attached. Nifritzu would mean where most of the leaves are torn in half, where the leaves of a lulav are supposed to be double leaves. Now, part of the process of turning a lulav into a groom, Tosfos explained, would be you take the leaves and divide each one in half. Take two double leaflets and divide them one from the other, like you do when you're making lulav rings, for example. So therefore, the Mishnah would be implying that if most of the lulav is like that, that the leaves are split apart and they're still attached to the shedra. Then it would be possible. As opposed to nifridu would mean where they're starting to grow apart. Then you have a third explanation from the Rambam that nifritzu means they don't even have to be completely cut off the shedra, but they're hanging downward. They're ripped off. Enough of their attachment to the shedra is ripped that now they're hanging downward rather than facing upward towards the tip of the lulav as they normally should. And again, nifridu, according to all of them, would mean the way they're starting to spread apart, but they haven't completed. Boyra Papa, Nechokat Yoimes Mahu. Rapapa has a question, what if the Tioimes has gotten split? Rashi explains that Tioimes is the top double leaf of the lulav. So you have again above the shedra, you have leaves continuing to grow up from the top of it. Rashi explains what it is, Rashi explains we're not talking about the double leaf. According to Rashi, what we mean is like this. At the top of the lulav, you have several leaves growing together, and again, usually they're tightly bound together. What happens if two of those leaves are split apart and the shedra is split apart with them below them as well? So what would be the din? So Toshma, We say that if the tuimus was taken away, was cut off, then it's possible. Now we say cut off my lab, wouldn't it be the case who I did nechafa? Wouldn't we assume the same thing as true who is split? And the answer is why not necessarily nitloshaini. You could say, well, it's completely removed, da'achosel, because after all, now the wulav is missing something, so now like you don't even have a complete ulakachtem lachem. Ulakachtem, they say it has to be lakichatama, it has to be a complete taking. And when that top leaf is missing, then you don't have a complete, then you don't have a complete lulav. But not necessarily. If it was cracked, would there be a problem? According to Rashi, anyway, we're talking about that the two leaves on top are split apart and the split goes all the way down to the shever. So Rashi apparently would have to understand it's not like we had before with the other kehemnik, where it looks like a fork, where the two ends really are very far apart, and visibly when you see the lulav, you see a split over there. We're talking about more the kind of thing where there's a split over there, it's still holding together, it's still tight, it's still fairly tightly together, but if you look carefully, you'll see a split. Tosfos brings that what it means is, again, we're still talking about the double leaves along the whole length of the lulav, that if most of those were split apart, then it's possible. To be exact, it depends whether it's nifritsu or whether nifridu, how many of them are broken apart like that. And then there's another explanation that different Rishonim have, that the tsuyimus over here does mean the top middle leaf, where the top middle leaf, which is a double leaf, like all the other ones, and therefore if that's split, then we're saying, Papa is asking whether it's possible, and the Maskana is going to be that indeed it is. So then they talk about that maybe that within that you have different opinions. Does it mean if most of it is split or only a little bit? Therefore it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should take a lulav where the top leaf is not split at all, which is what we do when we go buy our lulavim and we look carefully, or we ask the dealer to look carefully for us to see whether the middle leaf is split at all. Because lachchila, you shouldn't use one that's split even a little bit. B'dieved, if it's split a little bit, then you don't have anything better, then you can use one that's split a little bit. Okay. Ikadamri, another version in the Gemara. Amr of Yechanan, Amr of Shulman Levi. That Nechokat Yomis, if the Tiyomis is split, Nasik Nishinitlat Yomis, that's the equivalent of the Tiyomis being removed or possible, and therefore the Lulav is possible. So therefore, yes, we see that it is possible if Nechokat Yomis, according to the various definitions that we just had. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah of Yehuda that we said in the Mishnah that in the case where the leaves are starting to grow apart, nifridu olav, Rabbi Yehuda said, yagdenu milamayla, we should bind it together on top. So Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Mishum Rav Tarfon, the pasuk says, kapos tzmarim. The pasuk says, branches of a palm tree, but the word kapos can also be understood like kofos as in time. Therefore, it means, if the leaves are growing apart, then you have to tie them back together. That's why he says you have to tie them. The halacha is not like him, right? So Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Mimai Dahai Kapus Tzmorim Zululavu, Bechlal, Ravina asked Ravashi, how Bechlal do we know that Kapus Tzmorim refers to a lulav? Sure, Tzmorim means a date palm, so obviously there has to be something from the date palm, but how do we know from the psukim that it means a date, that it means a branch, that it means the closed branch, the lulav? A macharusa, maybe if I can, maybe we do need one of the open branches. The answer is, but in a kafus b'leka. Can't, because you have to tie, yeah, it has to be kafus, that means that the leaves are bound together with the shedra, and they're not. By a chodosa, they're growing at 45 degree angles. So the question is, the aim of ufsa. Maybe just the opposite. Maybe the pasuk is telling you that you should take a piece of a trunk of a palm tree, which after all is definitely kafus, it's one solid piece. The answer is kafus m'klal de'ikaparim. The answer is the word kafos, the word kafos, which we're darshaning as kafos, implies that it's something that could conceivably be separated, but you didn't. Instead, you're taking it while it's still attached together, as opposed to the trunk is always going to remain attached together. So therefore, it obviously can't mean that. What about the high kafos for emilolim, as opposed to the trunk is always going to stay together? Okay, the ema kufra. How do you know? Still, maybe what you should do is, maybe the Torah is telling you to take a kufra, which is, this is a branch that's not quite a chorusa yet. It's only a year or two old. The leaves of it are starting to grow apart. Maybe the Torah, like this, was saying the dieved, you can use it once the leaves start growing apart. And Rabbi Yehuda says you have to bind them together. But maybe like a chila, the Torah is telling you, don't take one where the leaves are tightly bound together. Take one where the leaves are starting to spread apart. And then bind them in such a way that they go together with the top of the lulav. The answer is, Amar Abayi, Durachher, Dachay Noyim, Mechon, Sivaseh, Sholim, Siv. The pasuk says that the Torah, the Torah's ways are ways of peace, and all its paths are pleasantness, noyam, of pleasantness. V'cholness of esei shalom, all the paths of the Torah are peace. Now, a kufra, the problem is that there are thorns, and there are thorns and sharp things that come out of it. That if you try to pick it up with you, that if you try to pick it up, that it's going to scratch your hands. So it can't be that the Torah is telling you to take such a thing that would be davkei noyam. Therefore, necessarily, it must be a lulav where the leaves are still tightly bound to the shedra, and therefore there's nothing sharp on there to lacerate your hands when you try to pick it up. In fact, on Amud Beis, we're going to have something similar. We're going to discuss how we know the identity of the hadas. Rava over there brings a different pasuk in that connection. Here, the Gemara doesn't bring that. Tosfos says because Rava wasn't here when they had this discussion in the Mishmash. Okay. Rava Tosfah, who was one of the last Amoraim, asks Ravina, here's another question. The Ema Tauti Kafi de Tavi, how do we know that you're supposed to take only one lulav? After all, Kaf Pois Tmarav is in the plural, so maybe you're supposed to take two lulavim. So he answers him, Kaf Pasksi. Yes, but the word is written in the Pasuk without the Vav, so we can douse it, so we can understand it, we can read it as if it's a Kaf Pas, which means one branch. Okay, so then the question is, the Ema Chodah, fine, so maybe it means that if you take only one leaf of a lulav, how do we know you have to take the entire lulav? The answer is, lahu kaf korimai. That wouldn't be called kaf, that we need something that's called kaf ois. So therefore, necessarily, we have to be talking about the branch that has many leaves on it, and we're saying that it has to be kaf, it has to be kaf ois, so it has to be kofos. So we dash in on three things from the word. It's kafos, meaning branches. It's also kafos that the leaves have to be bound together. Like you should be taking one where the leaves are all bound together. And kafas in the singular, meaning only one, not two. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Sinei Har HaBarzel Ksheva, we said that the lulavim from Har HaBarzel, which is a very hard, stony mountain, and therefore the lulavim that grow over there are very stunted, and the leaves of them, the leaves of them are not long like the leaves of a normal lulav. So nevertheless, we set their kosher. Amar Abaya, Loishanu Ela Shiroisha Shalzeh Magil Tzad Ikre Shalzeh. That would only be kosher, though, if at least the leaves are long enough that the tip of one leaf reaches the base of the next leaf. Abel Ein Roshim Shalzeh Magil Tzad Ikre Shalzeh. But if it doesn't even reach the base of the next one, posel, then it would be posel. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hofi. In fact, we learn something similar in a Braisa. A Braisa said, Sinei Har HaBarzel Psula, that the palm trees of Har HaBarzel are posel, the lulavim of Har HaBarzel are posel. So what do you mean they're posel? But Anan Tanan Ksheira, or Mishnah said that it's kosher, Ela Shema Minaka Abaya. Obviously, the answer must be like what Abaya said, that there's a difference between whether the tip of each leaf reaches the base of the next one. So the Mishnah is talking about where it does, therefore it's kosher. And the Braisa is talking about where it doesn't, therefore it's possible. The Ikka de Rami Le'yuma, there's others who didn't learn it. Like this we started with a biased statement, then we showed how the Braisa and the Mishnah together fit with a biased statement. There were others who learned it the other way around, that they started with the Mishnah, and then the Braisa, they realized there's a contradiction, and then Abaya gave an answer to resolve the contradiction. So the Ikka de Rami Le'yuma, there are some Chachamim who learned it as starting as a question. Tanan Sinei Har HaBarzel Kosher was saying that the hard palm trees of Har HaBarzel are kosher, while Tanya Psula, but we learn in a Braisa that's possible, and the answer came, Amar Abaya, Loi Kasha, Kansha, Rosh HaShazeh, Magil Tzad Ikri Shoseh, Kan She'en Rosh HaShazeh, Magil Tzad Ikri Shoseh. It depends whether the tip of the leaf reaches the base of the next one. The Mishnah is talking about where it does, therefore it's kosher. The Braisa is talking about where it doesn't, therefore it's possible. Okay. Talking about these Sinei Har HaBarzel, Amr of Mary and Amr of Yishuv and Levi, V'amila Rabba V'amori V'shum Rav Yechem and Zakkai, Shnei Tmorais states Maris Yesh Begay Ben Hinnayim. There are two palm trees in Gay Ben Hinnayim, which is a valley near Yerushalayim. But Ola Oshim Beminayim, smoke comes out of the ground between those two palm trees. Those are the kind of trees that we're describing over here in the Mishnah that you can use the lovim of them for the mitzvah of lulav. This is the entrance of Gehenna. The Gemara actually in Erevin talks about there's a few different entrances of Gehenna in different places in the world, one of them being this one right outside Yerushalayim. Maharsha explains the symbolism of it, the chlal, that it means like there's different areas in the world, different things that a person might fall into that lead them to Gehenna, and one of them is associated with Yerushalayim, with the idea being that Yerushalayim is the place where Torah comes from. You can have a person who doesn't focus, you can have a person who learns Torah with Kanter for the wrong reasons, and he's involved in his own Tigris representing the palm trees over here, and two palm trees representing Machloikas, and we're saying that there's an entrance to Gehenna in that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Lulav Shiyesh B'Shloishet Fachim Polo. So we said that a lulav that is three tefachim tall, kedei l'nam ne'avoy, the Mishnah said enough to shake it, is kosher. So Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, shir hadas v'arava shloisha, the lulav avra. What it actually is the minimum length of the hadas and the arava is three tefachim, the minimum length of the lulav is four tefachim. Kedei shiyeh lulav yotzim v'ahadas tefach, because you want the lulav to be able to stick out one more tefach than the hadas. Rav Parnach says in the name of Rav Yechanan differently. Shedra shalul of tzarach shiyetz min ahadas tefach. The shedra has to stick out one tefach beyond the hadas min ahadas. When you look at a lulav, you have the shedra ends at a certain point, then you have the leaves continuing to be above that, all the way to the top of the lulav, sticking up. So according to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, it's fine that you only have one tefach of the lulav, including the leaves. The tefach can include the leaves sticking up above the hadas min ahadas. Whereas according to Rav Parnach, you need that a tefach of the actual shed which should stick up. So the Gemara says tnan. So either way, the point is both of them are saying the lulav has to be four tefachim. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? On Mishnah tnan lulav shesh b'shloish tefachim kedei l'naneh b'kosher. The Mishnah said that if the lulav is three tefachim long enough to shake it, then it's kosher. So three, not four. The answer is ema u kedei l'naneh b'. What the Mishnah means is three tefachim to go together with hadas and arabas, plus an extra tefach to shake it, because the part that's bound together with the hadas and anarabas is not going to be the part that shakes, only the unbound part. Which, by the way, you know, we have on a shiner, the minig is that we usually have throughout Sukkot, we have five bindings on the lulav, three to hold the hadas and anarabas together with the lulav, and two on the lulav itself. But our minhag is that in Hishana Rabbah, before Hallel, we remove the top two rings, and that everyone's explained. The idea is, because then it makes it that the top of the lulav will shake much more when you shake the lulav, it'll shake back and forth much more, because it's not bound by the ring, and therefore that's an expression of simcha. So therefore, but here also, the idea is we want that the top of the lulav should be free in order to shake, and therefore you need to have a tefach of it sticking above the hadas and arava. So according to Shmuel, it's enough that you have a tefach total of the lulav sticking up, and according to the Parnach, it has to be specifically a tefach of the shed. So therefore, Ma'u Pidei Esplei, so each one holds the way he holds, whether we mean the lulav as a whole or whether we mean specifically the shefer. Okay, Toshma, let's look at Braisa. Shir Hadas Ma'arava Shloish, the lulav Abba. The Braisa says the minimum length of the Hadas and the Arava is three tefachim. The lulav, the minimum is four. Ma'ila Bahavi Oven. L'chorda, four tefachim means including the leaves. So then it would be a question out of Parnach in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, who said that the shedra itself has to be four tefachim. And the answer is loy, levad me'olim, not necessarily the braisa might mean besides for the leaves. The shedra itself has to be four tefachim. That's how it is. That's how it's brought. In Shulchan Aruch, the shedra itself has to be at least four tefachim. Or actually, you have a machlokes rishonim. Is the Gemara saying in the end, what if you have, let's say for example, what if you had dasan and arabas, let's say, are themselves a four tefachim tall? Is it good enough to have the shedra, or is it good enough for the lulav to also be four? Or is it always the lulav has to be one tefach, the shedra of the lulav has to be at least one tefach longer than the hadas min ha'arabas? That's how it is. Okay. Now, The Gemara says, Gufa, let's get back to the Braisa and analyze it. Shiur Hadaspar Rav Shlosh of a Lulavamba. The minimum length of a Hadas and a Rav is 3 Tfachim. The minimum length of a Lord is 4. Rav Tarfin Omer, Ba'ama Bas Hamisha Tfachim. Rav Tarfin says, an Amma of 5 Tfachim. So what does that mean? On the face of it, it sounds like Rav Tarfin is saying that you need the Hadas and the Ravas to be 5 Tfachim long. So Omer Rava, so Rava reacts to that very sharply. Surely, Mori and Reb Tarfon. May Reb Tarfon's master, may Hashem forgive him. How could he say such a thing? Hashka Ovos Shlosh Alayim Hashkathinen. It's hard enough to find Hadassim that are Ovos. We have 3 leaves on each level, like the layers we're going to talk about in connection with the next Mishnah and the Gemara. It's hard enough to find that 3 Tvachim. Alayim Hashkathinen, we can't find it. Bas Chamishim and Boya, you're going to expect us to find a Hadass 5 Tvachim long, it's very difficult to do. So how could Reb Tarfon say that you need an Amma of 5 Tvachim, which would be, I mean, let's put it in perspective, you know, 3 Tvachim is about 9 inches according to Rav Avraham Chaim Noah, about 12 inches according to the Chazanish. Reb Tarfon is telling you you have to have 5 Tvachim, 15 or 20 inches respectively. Rav is saying it's very difficult to find Hadassim that meet the criteria that we're going to talk about later, that they have to have 3 leaves on each level. So how can Rav Tarfon say that? So he also Rav Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he clarified what Rav Tarfon means. Amma bas shisha tfachim. What it is like this: a normal amma we talk about consists of 6 tfachim. Instead, asay osa bas chamisha. We divide a regular amma into 5 tfachim. So therefore, and then each of those we're considering for this purpose a tefach. Same am shloisha lahadas. So you have 3 such oversized tefachim are used for the hadas, bashar, and the remaining one, the lulav, is for the lulav. So what that would mean, in other words, that the hadasim have to be, as the Gemara is going to say, 3.6 tefachim. Because what you're doing is you're taking the amma itself, which is 6 tefachim, you're dividing it instead into 5, so each of those tefachim that we're talking about for this purpose is 1.2 regular tefachim, and 3 of those would be 3.6. So that's the amount that we need. Rashi in particular explains that what it means is that the hadas and arovas themselves have to be that length, and also the one tefach of the lulav that sticks up above them, like we said before, also has to be that kind of oversized tefach. So Gemara says the problem with that is kasha dishmul. So therefore, kama havalu. So how much does that come out to be? Comes out tlosa or tlosa fumi. It comes out 3 3/5, 3.6 tefachim. Fine, that's not so hard to find them all with 3 leaves on each level. Therefore, even Rava will be fine with that. The problem with that is kasha dishmul out of shmul. The problem is you have a contradiction between 2 statements of Shmuel himself. Here he's saying that the shiur of them is 3 tefachim. On the other hand, Rav Huna says also in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Rav Tarfon. So Shmuel is saying 3 tefachim. Now all of a sudden we're saying why halacha is like Rav Tarfon, which would be 3.6 tefachim. So the Gemara says, okay, void job. You could say maybe Shmuel is not being precise. He's rounding. The problem is, as we've had before, Eimer Davin and Loi Jok L'Chumra. You can say that he's not being precise when that will result in a Chumra. So he might, for example, say 4 Tvachim instead of 3.6, and that way for sure you have 3.6. L'Kula Mi'aminen, L'Kula Mi'aminen Loi Jok. How can he say that he's not precise, L'Kula? He's going to say 3 Tvachim. People are going to think we mean 3 regular Tvachim of 3 inches according to Rav Chaim Noah, let's say. So they're going to take a Hadas, which is 9 Tvachim long. And meanwhile, Shmuel is saying, the Halacha is like Rav Tarfon, meaning that it has to be a little longer than that. So now, he also Robin Omar. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained the other way around. What Rav Tarfon means is the other way around. Amma bas chamisha tefachim. It means you take an amma of 5 tefachim, a shorter than normal amma, which there is such a thing. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that such an amma was used to measure the kalim of the Mishkan. So you take that, asay osa shisha, and instead we divide that smaller amma into 6 tefachim. So now each of those tefachim is smaller than a regular tefach. Say mehen shloisha lahanas v'ashar lulav.
So now three of those go for the hadas, and one more tefach of that size goes for the lulav. So in other words, so now let's figure. You're talking about a five tefach amma, which is, let's go with Rabbi Avraham Chaima. A tefach according to him is about 3 inches. So a five tefach amma would be 15 inches. You're dividing that in six. So each of those tefachim is 5/6 the size of a normal tefach. It would be 2.5 inches instead of the normal 3 inches for a tefach. So now what we're saying is, Rav Tarfon is telling us that you can use these smaller than normal tefachim. So therefore, the hadas and the arava only have to be 2.5 tefachim tall rather than 3. And then the lulav has to be 1 tefach taller than that. Kama havalahu treu palga. So that comes out to 2.5. So tasha b'shmol b'shmol. You still have a contradiction with what Shmuel said, because before we said that Shmuel said it has to be 3 tefachim. And now the answer is lo dok. Now the answer is that Shmuel is not being precise. And now we can say that works because of l'chumra lo dok. Now we can say that Shmuel is not being precise. L'chumra, where he's saying 3 tefachim, but really he's saying the halacha is like the tarifin, that 2.5 tefachim would be enough. D'omer, v'nomer Shmuel, halacha to the tarifin, namely that he says the halacha is like the tarifin. Is that in fact the halacha? There you have a machlokes rishonim, whether the halacha is like Shmuel, who says that the halacha is like a tarifin, or not. Is the halacha like Rabbi Yechanan implicitly, or like the Chachamim, who said that you need regular size tefachim? We follow the Chachamim. At B'diyevet, we say a person only has a hadas or an arava, but 2.5, then B'diyevet he can be yotze with it, like Shmuel says. Okay, let's learn the Mishnah and a couple of lines of the Gemara. The Mishnah says, Hadas ha-gozo la-yavish posel, a hadas that's stolen or dry is posel, same as with the lulav, shalasheda v'shalanidachas posel, niktam roshoy, if the top of it was cut off, nifritu olav, if the leaves of it are torn off, or shahoyu anovav merubis me olav, or if it had more berries than leaves, the hadas grows berries on it, posel, then all of those is posel. The miyat and kosher, if you take off the berries, then it's kosher, so that you have more leaves and berries, then it's kosher. The aim of math in the yomtev, but you're not allowed to do that on yomtev, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara later on Daf Lamed Gimel, why not? Now, most of this is a repetition of what it said by the Lulav. The reason why it repeats it is because each of the Dalad Minim has something unique about it that you need to talk about. In the case of the Hadas, you have the berries, for example. So once it's mentioning those, then already it mentions, so once it mentions those, then it mentions all the other ones as well. There's a different explanation that, the vote would be, Mela, Lulav is not so easy to get. So you could say a little stolen Lulav is possible. Hadassim on the face of it are much easier to find. They grow wild. So maybe a stolen Hadass shouldn't be possible. The guy can easily replace it. Nevertheless, we're still saying it's possible. And then along with it, we mention all the other stuff. Okay, so what is a Hadass? The Gemara says, turn it up on him. The Pasuk calls it anaf eighth of us, a branch of a thick tree. That means, so that it makes it sound like the tree has to be all branch. Meaning, in other words, the tree is completely covered with leaves, because the leaves are like they're continuous up the whole branch. So shanof of choifinus eight. So it means that the leaves of it have to cover the wood of it. The ezahu heavy emas hadas. That's a hadas. And you see, when you look at a hadas, that the leaves can almost completely cover the stem. So the Gemara asks, the ema zesa, maybe it means an olive leaf, which also has very long leaves that one of them covers up till the next one. The answer is, but in an ovos velecha, yeah, but on the other hand, you have to have, the pasuk is saying two things, anaf eight, that you have to have the whole branch, the whole tree resembles a branch, in other words, that's covered with leaves, but you also have to have ovos, that it's like braided together, an olive leaf, you don't have that. They're continuous in length, but not necessarily in width around the branch, so it doesn't look like a braid that completely covers it. The Gemara says, the aim of dulva, maybe say that it's supposed to be a branch of a dulva, which Rashi explains as a chestnut. Tosfos says no, because that doesn't fit the description of the Gemara over here. Steinsaltz translates it as a plane tree. Anyway, maybe it means that. The answer is there you have the other way around. But in an enough of closing us, it's the letter. There it's the other way around. The leaves are The leaves look like they're braided together because they're thickly together, but not so thickly that they cover for that the leaves on one level go all the way up to the leaves on the other level. So therefore, you don't have that. You're missing the anaf eitz. The Gemara says the emer hiyuduf. Maybe say that the anaf eitz of this refers to a branch of a hiyuduf plant. So the answer is Amar Abaye Drecher Dachinayim Valeka. So Abaye uses the same answer as he did on Amar Aleph Drecher Dachinayim. Here you don't have that because a hiyuduf has thorns all over. It has sharp leaves, not thorns, but the ends of the leaves of it are sharp, and they're gonna lace away your hands when you try to pick it up. So obviously the Torah didn't mean that. Rava Amar Ha'emesva Shalom Ahavu. Rava brings a different pasuk that says truth and you should love truth and you should love shalom. This tree has no, this plant, the hiyuduf, has no truth and no shalom because it's a poisonous plant. So therefore, obviously, the Torah can't be telling you to use a poisonous plant for the dalad meaning. Okay, and we're going to continue on that point tomorrow and discuss the criteria of a hadas and discuss the point of what anaf eitz obis means and how the leaves should be configured.
Shkayach.
Shkayach.